Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U, AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2, WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com. Now, here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
Welcome to the show, everybody. The Mark Richt Show, brought to you by Williamson Automotive, Joe Zagacki and Don Bailey Jr., and University of Miami head coach Mark Richt. This weekend, the Hurricanes on the road for another night game against the Yellow Jackets of Georgia Tech. It'll be their whiteout game, so we'll talk about that a little bit later on. And oh, by the way, they're in honor of Calvin Johnson as well, pulling out all the stops. At any rate, Coach, we welcome back into the show. And tough night on Saturday this past week against Duke. A lot of rain, a lot of mud, and just a tough night all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, the rain and the mud was different. You know, we hadn't had that all year. Hadn't really practiced in it, to be honest with you. That had nothing to do with having the indoor. Just never was a time. It might have come down a little bit, but it came down hard. And really, as the game was going in the first half, it turned out to be that when it came to a slugfest, we slugged a little better than they did. We actually, you know, had the lead. You know, going into halftime when it was raining the hardest, it was raining a little bit coming out of, in the third quarter, and then it just pretty much stopped. The field conditions were still not good. You know, it's still tough to keep a ball dry, and the guys were still pretty much, you know, saturated. But you know, but when it came time to just lining up and running the football, we ran it well. I guess we ran for close to 300 yards or hit the 300 yard mark and busted some big runs and had some you know, great downfield blocking, had a little speed sweep we added to the offense, and didn't get a lot out of the speed sweeps, probably because it was tough to make a move, you know, in the slosh. But when you do rotate receivers like that, safeties tend to get out of position a little bit, and that's what happened on the DJ Dallas run. And you know, just dang good blocking up front. So it was funny, at the end of that run, it looked like he was trying to invite him to tackle him at the very end, but he got in the end zone, which was a great job. And while I'm talking about DJ, you know, I know he had those turnovers, and it's just, he's rarely fumbled the ball. I mean, our running backs in general have rarely fumbled the ball. And, you know, I know he was sick about that and even texted me, you know, that night, just, you know, wanting to apologize. I'm like, DJ, you, of anybody on this team, I know you care, you know, and you know, you didn't want that to happen. And, you know, he loves his teammates. He loves his team. He's been a baller for us. He's been a, you know, great positive force on this football team. But the ball came out a couple of times. And you know, that everybody knows that we can't have those kind of turnovers. So, but, you know, I know DJ is the right guy, you know, to be carrying the ball for us. And it was just one of those things.
Coach, I want to spend a little more time on that 300 yards. You don't see that happen very often, really, unless it's Georgia Tech rushing right for 300 yards. We rarely see it happen here. How much confidence does that give that group, that offensive line, and those backs that that's something that can be accomplished?
Well, it's good to see that kind of production. It's good to see that, you know, it doesn't always happen, you know. Like, if you might average 6 yards a carry or something like that, you don't get 6 yards a carry. Sometimes you get two, sometimes you get three, sometimes you pop a big one, sometimes you get eight, you know. We blocked well. I mean, sometimes you run and it's, you know, you leave a backer unblocked and the back makes a move and spins out and does something spectacular. And sometimes it's just the line moving people and getting, creating space for those backs. And that's what happened for the most part. And then, again, to get the big runs, you've got to block at the receiver position, and we did a better job of that. You know, so that was a real positive coming out of that game. How we ran the ball, how we blocked, how we, you know, blocked up front and with the receiver position as well.
The game was strange in many ways, and one of them was the field position. Seemed like all night long they were on a half a field, and all night long you were inside the 20. In fact, I think your average field position was the 15-yard line.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that was just them being willing to try to punt us down deep and our, you know, inability to get it out far enough. I mean, sometimes we move the ball you know, for a couple first downs or whatever, and a normal punt would have moved the field a little bit. But when you add the fact that we've struggled punting the ball and, you know, flipping the field in that way, that's been problematic. And so we were buried pretty deep. You know, first two drives Nicosi got in, he was, I think, minus five and minus two. And, you know, we just, you know, if we get back that far, we got to battle our way out of it. And, you know, sometimes just getting to midfield and punting them down to their side of the field is crucial, especially in a game like that that's that wet and sloppy. You know, we just couldn't do either one very well.
Coach, lately the big play has been a struggle. How much of it is some of the talent you have on the field? How much of it is simply the loss of Amon Richards?
I mean, Amon, we knew what he was about. I mean, he was a big play waiting to happen. We just, you know, some of the simple little crossing routes that, you know, he might have caught and taken a long way. You know, we've had, you know, we were playing Boston College. We called that play four times, and we had two drops, and we had one that was completed for about 11, 12 yards. But if Amon caught it on the run, he might have taken it to the house. Just real simple little stuff, you know, getting the ball in the hands of a really good playmaker. And it is much easier to try to double team a guy like Jeff, especially if he's in the slot. But even on the outside lane, you can double a guy. And if they're not in fear of anybody else, then they can do a lot of things that makes it difficult to get the ball to one guy. And you know, that's why we were trying to incorporate some of the speed sweeps and things like that, just to make sure the ball gets in his hands. And we got it in his hands three more times, and one time was about 12, 13 yards, and the other two, they pretty much got him at the line of scrimmage. But, you know, those are the kind of plays that if you do make the one guy miss, you can go a long, long way. And I think on a dry field, we'd had a better shot at that. But, you know, that's another thing that the weather, I think, affected to a certain degree. But, you know, they were playing in the bad weather too.
You talked a little bit about this week the quarterbacks are going to compete. You're going to have Malik and Nicosi compete before you make a decision. But if you zero in on Nicosi for a moment, I think he's played seven games. Are you able to draw any conclusions on where he is in his development?
He's getting there, you know. I think there's times when he needs to hang in the pocket a little bit longer and let things develop, or maybe, you know, throw a ball where, you know, there may be a guy beginning to come off of a block. But if you stand in there and you throw a strike and then a guy hits you, I mean, that's part of football. I mean, if you're going to be a pro passer one day, you got to be able to stand in there and make those kind of throws. And then there's certain times you got to cut bait. And when I mean that, I'm just saying where the protection does break down or guys aren't open, and then you got to go do your thing athletically. And he made some great plays. I mean, that fourth down conversion was a huge play because of his athleticism and his ability to spin out and throw the ball and complete one on the run on a fourth down and game. You know, it was like, if we don't get that fourth down, the game's over. But we convert because of his ability to move and make a play, and then we continue down the field, and looks like we scored a touchdown. It got called back, but, you know, he did a nice job of getting us in position to score.
Coach, also at that quarterback spot, no matter what the situation is, the first and second team guy, obviously the second team guy does get first team reps during the week. It's not like he's sequestered right to just the second team. He does run with the first.
Yeah, we have. I mean, it depends on the season. It depends on who's the starter, who's second team. But, you know, our second team guy does get some reps with the first team. And this week, we're splitting them right down the middle. We're just going to split them down the middle, and we're going to evaluate what happens and see what happens, you know, when the ball snapped and after the ball snapped, but see what happens in between plays and how they run the offense and how they motivate their teammates and, you know, how they, you know, become, you know, take over the leadership of this team.
Coach, you're going with a lot of young guys. Can you explain how some of the younger players make adjustments to their game and how they have to make adjustments to their game?
Yeah, I mean, it's a learning curve. I mean, every experience as a starter, or every experience that you have in a game that's different than the one before, you just puts in your memory bank. And the more reps you get, the more experiences you have, and the more you have in the back of your mind that you'll know how to react next time around. And that's the big key is, you know, once you live through something and all of a sudden you see how crucially important something is. You know, for example, this seems like a small thing, but when we're calling plays, if the ball's on a certain hash, it's pretty easy to know how the formation's going to get set up. But if the ball's in the middle, you're not sure if we're going to make a strength right or a strength left call, and that's the quarterback's responsibility. So if he makes a left call, then we'll know how to call the play properly to get the protection right and get the formation set properly. But if you're not very deliberate in whether it's a right call or a left call, like one time, started out making a left call and then looked at where he was on the field and decided, no, it should be a right call. In the meantime, we're making our call based off the fact that he said left, and then he changed it to right, and then the clock's ticking, and we ended up, you know, in a play that, you know, didn't have as good a chance to win if we knew if we could get the thing set properly from the get-go. So you, I guess the point I'm making is, you tell them that in the first day when you install the offense, hey, it's important that you make a right or a left call, and not only make the call, but, you know, put your arm here, not only to let the receivers who are coming back to know which side of the ball they need to be on, but also to let the play caller know where you're setting the strength of the formation to make sure we can set, you know, the play and the protection properly if it's a pass. But then when you live it out and you say, oh, now I see how important that is, you know, then all of a sudden you do a better job of it, and you got to be more decisive in that area.
We'll continue with University of Miami head coach Mark Richt. This weekend, the Canes and Yellow Jackets kick off at 7. Our broadcast begins at 3. More with Mark Richt right after this on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com. Hotline on AM 560 and 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com. Now, back to Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Canes, Joe Zagacki.
Happy to welcome you back to the Mark Richt Show, brought to you by Williamson Automotive. Joe Zagacki, Don Bailey Jr. on Saturday. It's Miami and Georgia Tech from Atlanta. We'll jump into that game here momentarily. Been a tough 3 weeks of football for you. How do you keep your team united? What are some of the challenges there, if there are challenges?
Well, no, there's challenges for sure. But, you know, you can't necessarily tell people how they should feel, all right? But you can educate them on how they should act. And, you know, that's the thing that you have to make sure everybody understands. And, you know, when it comes to team unity, when it comes to guys having each other back and supporting each other, you know, or even having that family that we claim that we have, it's times like this that normally reveals whether you have unity or not. It reveals whether you have a strong family unit or not. You know, that unity is built starting in January, February, you know, the mat drills, the off-season conditioning, the spring ball, the summer, you know, all the things that we do as far as work together. I mean, and working hard together bonds a team, no doubt. Everybody paying a price bonds the team. But there's other things we do, team bonding things, you know, we'll do the pool party and stuff like that. And so, you know, you're always trying to build team. You're always trying to build unity. You're always trying to build a team that can withstand adversity. And you got to try to create as much adversity as you can as you train in the off season and things of that nature. That's part of what mat drills does. You know, you've got to bust your tail 100% and do it right, or you got to go back and do it again. And if you don't like it and decide you're not going to do it that day, then you've quit the team. You've walked out on your teammates, you know. And so there's things that you do in the off season that will bond a team And so when the storms hit, you can weather the storm. And but even with that, you do still have to be able to manage what's going on, because like for a coach, I mean, he could get in his car and drive to the office and just start grinding away and working and be oblivious to everything that's going around. You know, you can choose to read or not read things on social media and things of that nature. Where, you know, the students, student athletes, a little bit different for them. I mean, they're out in the open. They got to go to class. They got to go do what they do. And they, I don't know if they can keep from reading social media stuff, you know. So they're probably reading it more than the coaches read it. I mean, and so, you know, when that happens, they got to understand that how important it is to truly, you know, have that family atmosphere, to truly have each other's back, because, you know, it's easy to have a guy's back when things are going great. You know, it's easy to say we're a family and things are going great. Well, how about when things aren't going great? You know, that's the true test. And so, but I got a lot of faith and confidence in these guys that no matter how bad it hurts and no matter how bad, you know, things seem to be, I think they're doing a really wonderful job, quite frankly. And that, you know, it starts with your coaching staff. I mean, the coaches have got to do a good job of showing that family, showing that unity. And now we're still, you know, not happy with what's going on, and we still know we got work to do and all that kind of thing. But, you know, not only do it for yourself, but do it for your teammate, do it for your fellow coach. You know, bust your tail and try to get answers and try to, you know, fix things, because it's important. You know, not only to you personally, but to your position group, to your coaches, to your fellow coaches, and to our fan base. You know, we want them to get excited. We want them to be cheering for us. You know what I mean? So, but the bottom line is, you know, united we stand, and divided you fall. We can't be divided.
There's one person at this university right now that knows what a championship program looks like, and that's you. And that's why you were brought here. To people don't often use the word rebuilding, but this place needed football, some rebuilding to it. Mm-hmm. And building or rebuilding, whichever word you want to use, we had right. 17 years, 18 years of to mediocrity, to so to speak, and last year had great success. You know what it looks like. I know right. you're frustrated now, but right. you know what the roster you're trying to put together and what you're trying to put together down the road.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is building your roster. A lot of it is, you know, getting not only, you know, your top 22 as far as your starters on offense and defense, but you need your top 44. You need your top 60 guys to be really great ball players. And you know, in you know, you got 85 on scholarship. You want every one of them to potentially become a ball player for you and a guy that can really perform well. And the more mature a team is, the better they are. It's just the way it is. I mean, and if you got, you know, if you're constantly playing really young guys, maybe even some of them before they're really ready to play, it's hard to have that consistency that you're looking for. You want to build it to the point where you got your veterans that are playing well, and your young guys are learning from them, and they're developing in the weight room, and they're developing, you know, within your system, you know, a little bit anonymously. While they're making their mistakes when no one's watching, and then by the time you get ready to let them fly, they're ready to fly, and they're ready to perform well.
How do you build your roster so that you have a team within a team, so that when one player leaves or gets injured, another guy of equal ability is ready to step in?
You know, we're always battling for that. But in the meantime, you play games, you know, and right. you got to perform. And you know, the measuring stick is pretty simple in football and sport. You know, they keep score. You either won or you didn't. And you know, when you don't, it's just it's just not fun. Not fun for anybody.
A player that's going to start playing. Let's take the freshmen especially. You've got to be careful to not put them in, or try not to put them in too early if you can, because that can hurt their development as much as anything.
Yeah, it's true. And you could probably look at the quarterback position and say that's more true than any position in football. You see it in the NFL all the time. You know, a really highly paid rookie, first-round draft pick, first pick of the draft, second pick of the draft, we got to play him. We got to get, you know, we got to get our money's worth. The fans want to see him, you know, and sometimes they're not ready. And that's why that position gets churned so much, I think, in the NFL, because guys go in there before they're really ready and then they don't have success. And then it's like, well, this guy can't play. Well, maybe he just wasn't ready to play yet, you know. And every once in a while, a guy can just jump in there as a true freshman or jump in there as a rookie and do great things. But for the most part, you know, it's a developmental position in a big way. Probably the toughest position to master of any sport, in my opinion, is quarterback. But, it's, you know, the same thing is true. There's a learning curve at every position across the board. And even though a guy might be able to run fast and catch a ball, I mean, there's guys that can defend that he's not used to being defended by. And, you know, he's got to learn how to make a move to get separation and keep separation. He's got to learn to, you know, give the quarterback room on a deep ball. He's got to learn to come back to the ball. He can't just run the old button hook and stand there and catch the ball, because that defender's going to run right by him and bat the ball away or pick it. He's got to run back to the quarterback and snatch it. I mean, just little subtle things that make the difference between success and failure. And those things just don't happen overnight. You got to learn them. And, you know, like you were saying, Joe, if you, you know, you have enough veterans that are in there doing it. And that's the other thing, too. When a freshman can see it done by a veteran, you know, even go back to Amon Richards. I mean, Amon was a guy that not only was talented, but he was very good at what he did. He's a very quick learner, a guy that really began to master that position. And so when a young guy can watch Amon do it on a daily basis, it's like, okay, I can do that. But explaining one thing is one thing, showing how to do it is another. And it's a much better teaching tool when you can show a guy than tell a guy.
Coach can coach it, and the coach can preach it, and the coach can relay the information. But sometimes the player can get through to the player, the other player can get through to the player.
Well, I mean, when an older player has been through it, he's like, hey, man, I've been through it. I know how you're feeling. I know this is frustrating, but just listen and do what coach asks you to do, and you'll have a better chance of success, you know, and don't get down on yourself or whatever it may be. You know, everybody has a high expectation of success, and when it doesn't happen like that, you know, people want to push the panic button. And you know, and players do it too. They're like, it's not happening as fast as I want it to happen, so I'm not happy, or my, you know, somebody in my family's not happy, or whatever, you know. So but if they just stick around long enough and keep banging away, the success will happen.
One more segment to go with University of Miami head coach Mark Richt on the Mark Richt Show here on the Hurricane Hotline. We'll talk about Georgia Tech when we come back on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Welcome back to the show, brought to you by Williamson Automotive. Joe Zagacki, Don Bailey Jr., University of Miami head coach Mark Richt. It's Miami and Georgia Tech coming up this week from Atlanta, and that means a completely different defense, I guess, for you in terms of how you defend them and the option, and they're running like they always do.
Well, you know, I was watching the first time I started watching their defense. I was putting on a tape of one of their opponents, and the first drive of the game for the opponent was at the 7 minute and 14 second mark in the first quarter. So you know what that meant? Their first drive was 7 minutes and 30 seconds. It was the half of the quarter was gone. They actually didn't even score on that drive. It was still 0-0. But the first time the other team got the ball was 7 minutes, 14 seconds ago in the first quarter. Second time they got the ball was like 2 minutes to go in the first quarter. And the third time they got the ball, it was like 10 minutes to go in the second quarter. So at that rate, you might get three or four possessions in a half for your offense, you know, if they do what they do. And they're very, very patient. They're methodical. They'll be okay with a 2 yard run, and then a 3 yard run, and then a 4 yard run, and then go for it on fourth down and get that 1 yard, and get a yard and a half and move the sticks and start doing it again. And there'll be normally a good little bit of time in between the plays. You know, they have done some up-tempo from time to time, but a lot of times they're going to take, 30 seconds, 35 seconds in between plays, So before you know it, they get a 10, 12 play drive. It is 7-8 minutes into the end of the quarter before you even touch the ball. So the possessions are going to be very, very precious on offense as well.
Coach, they have a new defensive coordinator who came from App State, who Miami played a couple years ago, and they're running the odd front. How does that affect the Miami offense?
Well, you just got to understand what you're doing assignment-wise. It does change, from a four down to a three down. But, we practice against that with our defense in the spring and fall. We had some games where they will go odd front. So it's just a matter of recognizing it and making the right calls and getting the hat on the right people. It's same thing in a four down. You just got to know what to do and then get after it.
Think about when people look at Georgia Tech, they think about, well, you got to stop that triple option all the time, which is true, but they always seem to get their yards. It really is a game. It's the ultimate test of complementary football, right? You have to have all three phases. You got to be able to score, you have your special teams work well, and then you got to stop them probably on four downs because they go for it so much.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be some four down attempts. That's just the way they play ball, and we got to make sure we, get off the field. I mean, that's just all there is to it.
Coach, as far as Cane fans going to Atlanta, that's always good to see when you come out onto the field to see the orange and green, especially during a whiteout.
Yeah, we love it when our fans show up, and our fans are loud and proud, and, we'll have a bunch of them there in Atlanta, I'm sure. And, the best part of a game when you're away is when you can hear your fans. And, the good things are happening. And even though they might be outnumbered, they'll be loud and proud, and we'll be working hard to give them something to cheer about.
Coach, where are you? Offensive line, you rotate a lot of guys. Where are you in that process with the offensive line? Do you see guys emerging?
Well, we looked at that too, and just like at the quarterback position, the offensive line position, we're gonna battle through practice and see who deserves to start and who deserves the most of the playing time. I mean, it's a production game, and if you don't produce, then someone else might get in there and produce for you. So, really, every position across the board we'll be looking at, and wide receiver. Offensive line, quarterback, punter, the whole thing. And we've been doing a pretty good job of, substituting, on both sides of the ball. But, our defense does a good job of, getting guys in the game that, in order to keep everybody fresh throughout the day.
Coach, as you wind down towards the end of the season, there is the four-game redshirt rule. We'll probably keep talking about that till the season's over. You keep looking at that chart every week and seeing where guys are and who can be added to the participation.
Yeah, I mean, you want to play guys, but I mean, you want to win games too. You throw a guy in there that hadn't played much, and well, we got to play him because of the rule, but he struggled, made a mistake, and dadgummit, we're sorry, but it cost us a big play in a game that might have cost us a game. So you got to be careful before you start throwing guys in the game if they're not ready. Now, I would say, any team in America would love to, play a game in which they could play all their young guys. But, we're in the ACC. It's a very competitive league, and we gotta work on the victory first.
Yeah, see, I think that's, one of the more challenging things probably for you, and going back to how you're building the program and trying to rebuild it, is you're in the situation of trying to find players and play guys, develop them, I guess, and win now. That's a tough formula.
Yeah, well, it's about winning now. I mean, it's not about, this season's over, let's get ready for next year. I'm not doing that. And I don't think the fans deserve it. I don't think the our seniors deserve that. And, we want everybody to fight their guts out, And every game matters to us, and we're competitors. We're going to compete.
Talk about this senior class, Coach. You've got some good personalities, some strong personalities, and they have, to this point, for sure been doing a great job in the leadership category.
Yeah, I mean, you got a bunch of really good seniors. And, you know, Jaquan Johnson, you think about on offense, and Red Wine, and you think about Tyree St. Louis on offense, and Tyler Gauthier, and there's more, you know, Mike Smith and on the D, and Gerald Willis, and, you know, just a lot of guys that have, you know, poured their guts out for this program. Even Big Langham, you know, he's a senior, and he's made some big plays for us, you know, you know, so those guys, they want to finish well. And we want to finish well for them. And that's a motivating factor right now, is for the young guys to play in such a way that it honors your seniors and honors your older veteran players.
I don't want to push those guys out the door, but time for a little weekly look at the recruiting world. And you can't really mention this, but I think there was a welcome to the U sign went up last night for the 2019 class, which you're still working on and building and looks pretty good. And then I think we lose track of two things. One, you're working on, I guess, 2020, maybe 21. Right. And, you know, when you got here, you weren't able to dive into those younger classes. So now you're in the process, not only were you able to get guys the 19, but put the periscope up for future classes.
Oh yeah, I mean, we're constantly looking at the young players, you know, the 19s, the 20s, the 21s, you know, making evaluations, making decisions on whether you're ready to offer them or not. And then, you know, creating the relationships that it takes to get guys that really want to be at your school and be able to, you know, win that battle down the final stretch too.
Coach, go back to when you first got into the coaching business, and you talk about recruiting. When you went to a high school and you were there for player A, and you see this sophomore at that time, that player A is a senior, you see a sophomore that looked like he might be something. Back then, did you try and build a relationship that early? Because you never heard of anybody getting offered
right. Any time
early.
Yeah, I mean, we would look at the next year's class, but we wouldn't necessarily be going, hey, you know, tell me about your sophomores, tell me about your freshmen. It probably wasn't that common, but there would be guys that would stand out from time to time that you just, I mean, I offered a kid one time out of the, going from the eighth to the ninth grade way back, but he was it was the spring ball going into his ninth grade year. And, you know, I'm not going to say the guy's name, but he was a guy that ended up being a first-round draft pick. It was just
– So you saw it then.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't the only one who saw it. You know, wasn't like, oh, I had this wonderful eye. I mean, everybody knew that guy was going to be special.
Before we let you go, people always talk about, oh, a personality or an identity of the team. Do you see that develop through recruiting and maybe some of the guys that you've brought in here in the last 2 years? Do you start seeing – them trying to create an identity? Is that something you want to achieve in recruiting?
Yeah, well, there's no doubt. I mean, you want to coach in a certain way, you know, a disciplined way, a physical way, you know, and you want guys to play that way. You want guys to, you know, again, you want them to know what to do, you want them to know how to do it, and you want them to play with a spirit in an effort level that this place deserves. And that's what it's all about. And that's what we're trying to put on tape. And that's what we're trying to teach. And that's what those guys are trying to attain.
Coach, last thing, recruiting-wise, what is the impact of Hard Rock Stadium on these young men who've never been there before? I mean, it's just got to be an eye-opening experience for these recruits.
It is. I mean, it's a beautiful stadium. I mean, anybody who goes there understands, you know, what an awesome place it is. I mean, everybody's got an unbelievable seat. The venue is a beautiful venue. It's got all the scoreboards. It's got, you know, it's just got a vibe to it. I mean, and the crowd, the noise of the crowd is accentuated by the rooftop, and we create wonderful atmosphere there. And it starts with the fans showing up, and it starts with us giving them something to cheer about.
All right, it's Bobby Dodd Stadium, a place you're familiar with. Saturday.
Oh, yeah, I've been there a few times.
And I've had pretty good success there, so the very best of luck.
All right, thank you, man.
All right, that's University of Miami head coach Mark Richt. We'll continue on the show right after this.